It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, looking at the rise of fake news, its impact. How to identify fake news as well? Do you know it when you see it, when you read it, when you hear it? Also, the sources of fake news and what we as citizens, as media consumers, can do about it. We want to have you join us this hour as well with your thoughts about countering fake news. Do you alert others? Do you alert the one who shared the fake news with you via your social media? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Our email, tweet us at IPRTalk, or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave your comment or question. Joining us, first of all, for this hour, Melissa Zimdars is with us, Assistant Professor of Communication and Media at Merrimack College. That's in Massachusetts. Professor Zimdars, Melissa, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
I'm referencing an article you recently wrote post-election in the Washington Post titled, "My Fake News List Went Viral, But Made-Up Stories Are Only Part of the Problem." I want to talk about that fake list news list in just a moment. But can you tell us, first of all, how do you characterize the change that's happened over the past few years and what's really come to the fore in the last year, most noticeably in this last election, regarding where people are getting their news and the rise of fake news? What's going on?
Well, people, firstly, are getting more and more of their news from social media. There are a lot of academic studies that support this, and it's fairly well known now that we aren't getting local newspapers delivered to us. So information is becoming, in some ways, really centralized around the web. But with that, there's a corresponding proliferation of kinds of sources on the web, everything from mainstream sources that everyone knows to pretty small niche political sources to obviously fake news sources.
Mm-hmm. And the problem comes here with differentiating the reliable sources from the unreliable?
Yes. And sometimes fake news sources they steal basically from the worst aspects of contemporary journalism. So creating clickbait headlines like we see legitimate news sources sometimes doing, and, you know, utilizing that information and those practices to really try to fool people into circulating what looks like news.
Mm-hmm. And who are the people behind fake news? What are the various, I know it's not one position, there are various positions to sort of disorient it how would you say deceive your readers or listeners?
Yeah, so there's different kinds of fake news, and a lot of attention has been paid to the fake news that's produced by teenagers in Macedonia. They don't have a particular political goal. They're purely in it to make money through advertising revenue. And this is the case with some U.S. fake news makers who basically do it because they found it's a way to generate extra money. Mm-hmm. But there are also a ton of websites out there that are borderline fake news. They're basically propaganda sites, and those have a much more explicit political goal, often in dividing people across the political spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to some of what your article addressed. How do we identify fake news? You've got some tips there, some ways to analyze news sources. Share those with us.
Yeah, so one tip, and it seems kind of obvious, but I find that it's not, and that's to do a gut check. So fake news sites and highly propagandistic sites, they are purposely trying to evoke outrage or happiness in order to encourage people to click, like, share, whatever. And so if you read something and it makes you, like, really angry, it's always a good idea to keep reading on the subject to contextualize it, to make sure those feelings are warranted. There's also things you can do in terms of looking at the website where the story is coming from. So most fake news stories are just that, stories. And there isn't a lot of time spent in building up the details of the websites that host them. So most of the time, this means there's no About Us section, there's no Contact section. Usually this means the website is only a couple months old. And so a total lack of details or authors or About Us is usually a pretty good sign you're on a bad website.
Mm-hmm. And because, am I seeing this right, Melissa, because we're being thrown into, in relatively short time, into this huge uptick in fake news in our news media environment, we don't quite know how to deal with it. We see a headline. We sometimes don't even read the article. We see a headline that makes us angry or upset or something like that, and that's what gets embedded in us, and we haven't learned yet, most of us, to go beyond that?
No, I mean, there's a lot of truth to that, and I myself am guilty of it. I was duped by a fake news story because I wanted the story to be true. I agreed with it. I saw the headline, and someone I trusted posted on Facebook, and that's a huge key. So a lot of this circulates based on how much we trust the original poster of it. So if we trust that person's ability to analyze information, we may not do so ourselves. So it's very complicated.
You're right, right. I wonder if you can share a story of a news story that caught your attention, perhaps made you mad or caught your attention for whatever reason, and then you did follow up and pursue it, as you suggest with your tips there, and it turned out to be not real.
Yeah, so one news story that really stood out to me during the election was happened just days before. Websites were claiming that the mainstream media was rigging the election, just as Donald Trump had claimed during some of his rallies. And their proof of this was that Newsweek released a cover that said Madame President on it. And this became evidence that, well, obviously they know she's going to win. When in reality, Newsweek produced two covers, one showing President Trump and the other one, you know, featuring Hillary Clinton. But all of these fake and propagandistic websites chose to focus on one as evidence, and that was circulating and riling people up and further creating distrust for mainstream news sources, even though this is a common practice.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one example. And it's interesting, in analyzing fake websites, I came across one website that even instructed other websites how to best share that information in order to cause outrage and get people to click on it and share it further.
Mm-hmm. So this is it seems to me that people who are not in the media, who, because in the age of the internet, anybody can go on, have a blog or so forth. This is some people are doing it. You get a real sense of power, don't you? You get out there and you think of something, a headline, a fake news story that goes viral, so to speak, and you feel great, I suppose, in a certain way. A certain type of person feels great.
Yeah, and I think this does give, for fake news websites or really partisan ones, it does give them a lot of influence over the kinds of information that is entering into the public discourse, and it's really easy to do. They usually rely on real news stories, take a nugget of truth from them, or completely make up something, and they can write it in a matter of minutes and have it be really influential on people.
Okay. Tell us a little bit before we go to callers to join our conversation right now, starting off with Melissa Zimdars of Merrimack College in Massachusetts, talking about how to identify fake news and the rise of fake news. Our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Tell us briefly about how you're handling this, specifically with the labeling that's going on that I see on your website.
Yeah. So the labeling has become very expansive. So if you've been paying attention to fake news at all, it's sort of been co-opted by some of the fake news websites, or even by President-elect Trump himself, to label any kind of information that one disagrees with as being fake news, right? And so the labels I try to use include fake news, but also understanding that some of it is conspiratorial news or hate news designed to target particular groups of people. So I've been trying to develop a taxonomy that makes fake news a little bit more usable and hopefully prevents it from also encompassing mainstream media outlets.
Mm-hmm. Share some of the tags. You have quite a few tags. You can't share them all, but share a few just so we get an idea.
Yeah, so one would be like the tag satire, just to differentiate between, you know, important political fake news and fake news of the less important variety. There's extreme bias, so those are propaganda sources. Junk science, So some of the original fake news is actually in the form of junk science. And then there's rumor mill, so sources that purely traffic in innuendo and unverified claims.
Okay. Join our conversation with Melissa Zimdars. We have other guests to come as well. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Suzanne. Suzanne calling from Grinnell. Hi, Suzanne.
Oh, hi, yes. I just happened yesterday to be listening to, I don't know, it was like WHO or something, and they had a call-in program, and this woman called in and said, I'm so glad that Trump is tweeting. I feel like this is a good thing because, you know, there's all this fake news out there, and there's fake and real news, and now there's the straight news.
Mm-hmm.
And he's giving me the straight news, and that's all I need. And then, of course, the guy tried to get in on this, and he said, well, yes, and we'll report on Trump's tweets, and then you'll get straight news that way. And so the idea that, you know, everything else was fake and that all you need to hear is Trump's tweets, that will tell you the straight news. And I'd never heard that phrase before, and I found the whole concept terrifying. So.
Mm. Suzanne, good point here, and we have heard that, too, that Donald Trump is eliminating traditional media, and we also heard, you know, of a step just in the last couple of days where we're not sure if the media landscape in the White House itself, perhaps displacing the White House press corps, will be coming in the days that follow with under a President Trump. But Melissa, comment on what Suzanne just said in Grinnell.
No, I mean, I completely agree that it's really frightening, and I think it's one tool that he's using to discredit mainstream sources that are critical of him. So by undermining them, by labeling that, you know, mainstream media as being fake and that he's providing the real information, that will dissuade people like who the caller is talking about from questioning what Donald Trump is saying in the future, because it's perceived as more true somehow.
Mm-hmm.
When it's not.
Right. And we know the news media doesn't get it right every time. And some organizations, we like to think NPR and IPR, get it right most of the time. We do our best to do that. But they're, you know, if you're in public office, you have been, let's just say, wronged by the media at one time or another. That's fair. Mm-hmm. That's safe to say, right? So to a certain extent, what politicians say when they want to have the direct connection to their people is true in some sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Obviously, media outlets make mistakes, but the difference is we often see retractions, we see follow-up stories, we see efforts usually to address those mistakes, and the public normally knows about them after, you know, weapons of mass destruction and all of the errors we now know about that. I mean, that comes to light, and so I think that's the main difference, is we need to acknowledge that mainstream media isn't infallible without going so far as to encouraging people to completely distrust them.
Mm-hmm. Join our conversation with Melissa Zimdars as we talk about the rise of fake news, why it matters, how we deal with it. Join our conversation with your story of how you dealt with fake news, perhaps being dealt to you by a friend through social media. Cheryl tweeting us that she will call out friends sharing fake news on social media. She says, though if they are friends I want to keep, I usually just send a link, Snopes.com, for example. For those who don't know, Melissa, perhaps you can tell us what Snopes is about.
Yeah, so Snopes is a website that tries to debunk fake news, and they've been around for a long time, fact-checking a lot of the claims and disproving you know, like many fake news stories. But part of the problem with Snopes, or what I found when I've linked to them, is that when you're calling out someone for circulating fake news and you rely on Snopes, people will say, well, Snopes is just biased and they're trying to prevent
right.
the truth.
Everybody who doesn't agree with me is biased.
Exactly. And so I think Snopes is important, but it also has pitfalls.
Okay. Let's have Walter McCusick join our conversation as well. He's in our Des Moines studio, National Director for Vote Smart. Walter, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Formerly known, I understand, as Project Vote Smart. This is a nonpartisan organization founded in the early 90s by former Presidents Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter, and a bipartisan group of national politicians. And a bit of internal news for you. You're having a partnership with Drake University, moving from Montana to Iowa.
That's right. I actually just arrived last week, and we'll be starting operations around the 1st of February. And we're really excited to be here. We've been warmly welcomed by Drake's community, and we look forward to having a lot of their students and other members of the community and to volunteer for us to help us build this voter self-defense system, as we call it, to help voters have the facts.
Mm-hmm. Before we have you weigh in on what we've been talking about with Melissa, tell us a little more. What is Vote Smart? What is your mission, and how does your mission relate to the rise of fake news we're talking about today?
Sure. Our mission at Vote Smart is to arm citizens with the facts when they go to vote in the voting booth. We cover six major categories of data that I'm sure we'll talk about, but our hope is that when citizens go to vote or when they're watching their officials act on their behalf, they have the tools they need to verify claims. And I think that is how it ties into what you've been discussing with Melissa, is that we as citizens do have some tools at our fingertips to try to verify claims that are out there, and we hope to get into as many people's hands and minds to help them verify the things that they are reading about.
Mm-hmm. And you really key on the fact that this needs to be easy to understand, not only unbiased in a way to size up an issue or a politician, voting records and so forth. So how do you do that? Because a lot of us just don't have the time in the day to, you know, okay, there's a story, let's follow it back, let's spend 20 minutes finding out if that's fake or not. That's not realistic going forward, is it?
Sure, and Melissa alluded to this in the changing media landscape from print media to the current environment we're in. And I think when VoteSmart was founded about more than 20 years ago, and one of the things we were trying to accomplish then was actually collecting all this information in a database. And the environment that we're now in is not so much that you can't get this information, but there's so much of it out there. And one of the things that we do focus on is putting it into a clean and understandable format on our website. And this comes across in a few different ways. For example, we collect ratings and endorsements from special interest groups to verify whether or not a candidate has been endorsed or rated a certain way by a particular interest group. We collect those in a standardized way. We translate them to a 0 to 100 scale that, again, makes it a little bit easier to understand instead of some of these groups that might have two thumbs up or five stars. We'll make it a little bit easier for users to understand. With votes, which you mentioned, we collect all voting records in all 50 states in the national level, but then we select key votes on particular topics that will allow voters to keep an eye on the legislation they most care about. And we have certain criteria across all these data categories to be sure that we can get things that are useful to voters and make it useful to them.
Mm-hmm. How do we know that you're not fake news, that you don't have an agenda there at Vote Smart?
That's a great question, Ben. I think one thing that we focus on is how we do our research. You alluded to our nonpartisanship. That starts with our organization, our board. We are founded by a nonpartisan group of political opposites. You mentioned some of the famous members over the past. And the way that the board of directors works is that they will be matched with a political opposite in order to join. So that helps keep our direction.
The political opposite, define that a little more?
Sure. So say there's a major Democrat that wants to join the organization, say a former senator, will find someone who would be, say, on the Republican side of things to, again, try to keep the board balanced in that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As for funding, we also take almost all of our donations come from thousands of individual donors. We don't take any corporate money, and we also just have a little bit of foundation money that comes in as well. So our funding in that way helps keep us nonpartisan, and it comes back down to who's doing the research on the ground. The staff is committed to checking their politics at the door, as we like to say. They're all people who are very committed to the cause and committed to providing people this information, and that's reflected in the procedures we have for using primary sources to get people the facts they need.
Now that you have us all excited about the website, you better tell us where to find you.
Sure. VoteSmart.org is the website. You'll see tools there for searching for your officials, as well as other information that might have particularly to do with legislation, special interest groups, and other political facts.
Walker McCusick with us. I think I called you Walter at first. Excuse me, Walker. I didn't mean to do that, of course. He'll be with us for the rest of the hour. Walker will. Let's go to our phones. Before we go to a break, Jason is with us in Des Moines. What do you want to chip into our conversation about the challenge facing us by the rise of fake news?
Yeah, thanks. And I think he really addressed something I wanted to talk about. In my experience, as the first guest noted, I think this started as just misinformation on accident that were just unchecked facts. And then folks realized that they could push these unchecked facts as actual fake news, and we have this monster we have now that literally has, I think, swayed a national election. And in my experience, there's really only one side of the aisle that's interested in truth and fact-checking. So my question for the guests would be, are they going to find it worthwhile to try to convince, and I will say it, mostly Republicans, that their information isn't just fake, I mean, it's intentionally fake, and that, you know, neutral sources aren't biased against them, they're just true? Because in every instance I've had where I've pointed, oh, that's fake news, I mean, I've had folks who will come back and say, no, it's not fake news, even if their own article disproves what they're trying to say. Mm-hmm. They completely misread the article itself. They have no interest in doing any fact checking. They just want to reconfirm their preconceived notions and move on. Right. Are you finding the effort to convince these kinds of people who really have no interest in reasoning about this to change their mind?
Yep. Now, Walker, let's put that to you. You really have to have an interest. If you want the real deal, you have to really want it and not just accept something that fits into your church of ideas, if I can put it that way.
Absolutely. I think Jason hits on an excellent point. Excuse me. We are founded on the premise that citizens do want the facts and that they want to get this information that includes checking some of the stories that they're reading. If you go to VoteSmart's website and explore the kind of information that we have, it's fairly raw. It's basic information about people's biographies and their votes and the things that they say. And in that way, we try to be sure that we can be used by any citizen, regardless of their party, just to verify the things that they're reading or the things that candidates are saying about themselves. And we hope that we can be a source like that. We reached 10 million people in this past election cycle. We want to reach a lot more to help people, because in a lot of ways these stories come from many different angles, as Melissa said. So you need to have tools to be able to verify them.
Mm-hmm. A quick word from Melissa before we go to break. We'll have Melissa and Walker with us in the second half hour. But Melissa, what about that resistance to, well, not really caring if it's fake or not, if it fits in with your worldview?
Yeah, there are some studies or, you know, preliminary polls showing that it's not just people being duped by fake news, but some people actively circulating news regardless of whether it's true or not. And I've definitely found this anecdotally in some of the responses I've received from my resource. But generally, I think it's a fairly small percentage of people that tend to be very far on the right or the left. And there are a lot of people who really do want these tools and to know what they're circulating.
Okay, we'll be back with Melissa Zimdars of Merrimack College in Massachusetts. Also, Walker McCusick, VoteSmart National Director. They've just moved their headquarters here to Iowa, as he outlined there. And when we come back, we'll talk more about the rise of fake news, how we deal with it, why it matters that we deal with it appropriately. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Your thoughts, your questions about countering fake news. It's River to River. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in just a moment. And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow, Politics Wednesday. President-elect Donald Trump recently endorsing British citizens' vote last year to leave the European Union. He predicted more EU countries would follow suit. He also declared NATO obsolete. We'll talk tomorrow a little of analysis of how Trump's words are unsettling traditional alliances. Tomorrow, Politics Day. We'll hope you'll tune in and join the conversation tomorrow at noon as well. Today, we're talking about the rise of fake news, how to identify fake news, why it matters that we counter fake news and get a real story. If we see Melissa Zimdars is with us, Assistant Professor of Communication and Media at Merrimack College in Massachusetts, one of her detection, I guess, a sniffer there, like a sniffer dog, is if it makes you really mad and you read it on the web, you better do some checking, right, Melissa?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Walker McCusick is with us as well. He's VoteSmart National Director. This is a project formerly known as Project VoteSmart. It's a nonpartisan organization founded in 1992 by two former presidents, Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter. A bipartisan group of national politicians, and what they're trying to do at votesmart.org is get some easy-to-understand, unbiased information that includes things like candidate stances and voting records, campaign finances, so we can counter the fake news that is proliferating here. And if you'd like to tell us your story of receiving fake news, perhaps you got one of these, you followed up or from a friend, for someone on social media, What do you do about it? How do you counter fake news? 1-866-780-9100. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Let's also add to our conversation, Scott Racker is with us. Scott Racker is with us, director of the Robert D. and Billy Ray Center at Drake University. I hope I got that right, Scott, the center.
You got it all right, Ben. Thank you very much. It's great to be with you and your listeners.
I wanted to mention, too, if your name sounds familiar to Iowa listeners, Scott, you're a former state lawmaker. You served as a representative in the Iowa House of Representatives in the Republican Party from the late 1990s until 2012. Tell us a little bit about the way you see, Scott, fake news playing a role in this last election campaign.
Well, yeah, thanks, Ben. And one of the things that just as further context is, you know, for over 20 years, our professional passion and career pursuits have been with the work of the Ray Center and Character Counts, focused on civility, ethical leadership, and character development. And at the same time, for 14 of those years, had the opportunity to privilege to serve in the Iowa State House. So have seen the lens from both sides. Mm-hmm. I give you that as context is the reason as you look at this last campaign and you'd ask the question as we came back after the news, why is this even important? I think it's important because whether we're looking at our public servants and elected officials who are making decisions by their votes and their words, or whether it be the media, or whether it be ourselves as individual citizens, it's important because we want to make informed decisions. And informed decisions carry with them a burden not only on the media, not only on the public servant, but also on the individual. And I think that some of that fell apart in this last election. Clearly, I think what we've seen is an all-time high of cynicism and low regard of trust within the media. That's been exacerbated by fake news as well, and even things such as we just saw recently that came out from the BuzzFeed, where, you know, for the first time ever in a sub-headline even with a report they had that the allegations are unverified and that the report contains errors. And, you know, mainstream media doesn't do those types of things. They seek facts. They check facts. They verify facts. And, you know, I as an individual citizen would have to put my own intelligence department together to know if that was true or not true, what's there. And that's why we rely on an independent media. So I think whether it actually affected the election or not and how people cast their votes, I think there were a lot of people that made very informed votes and knew exactly what they were voting for and wanted to see in this election. And I just can't help but believe there were people that were influenced by other things and other factors that may in fact not have been informed decisions with factual information.
Mm-hmm. Scott, let me throw this tweet at you from Christian, who is listening. It seems to be in your area of expertise. Fake news. Christian tweets about fake news. Please address the U.S. failure to teach basic critical thinking, the scientific method, evidence-based problem solving. Is that what you're about to? You're formerly of Character Counts. You have these pillars of character for good citizens. Critical thinking there?
Yeah, absolutely. Critical thinking is important to all of us. And my hope would be, in fact, I think what you see in Iowa happening here, not sure where the person that tweeted that's coming from, and maybe they are coming from Iowa. But, you know, when you look at the focus on STEM education and critical thinking skills that are necessary, what I would add into that, though, is the critical thinking is, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. had said to teach to educate a person in mind but not the morals is to educate a menace to society. So it's not just critical thinking. We also have to have these character competencies, right? So we do work with six pillars of character: trustworthiness, respect, responsibility, fairness, caring, and citizenship. Apply those into this whole fake news conversation from each end. What trustworthiness? What do I do today, Scott Racker, to act in a capacity worthy of trust? And that deals with things like honesty, integrity, keeping my word. And what are the news media's responsibility for upholding the trust and the public trust? And the responsibility, my independent responsibility to seek out, is this factual information? I see mm-hmm. this on a Facebook feed from somebody that's a friend of mine, and I trust that friend, I know that friend, but the headline doesn't make sense. Do I not only have a responsibility, A, to vet out, is that true or not? And B, if it's not true, am I going to go back to that person either publicly on the social media platform or privately through a message or directly and say, you know, check your facts on this, because I don't think that's factual information.
Have you done that, Scott, as well?
Yeah, I do have had the opportunity to do that. I tend to believe in public public praise and private critique. It's an old Little League coaching theory. And there are times where I have sent back on an independent message to somebody to check that. And if I see that there's a string that's lengthy and going one direction, then I might post a message on there as well. But I like it when people can correct their own information rather than being corrected.
Well, I want to ask Melissa about this in a moment. But, Scott, how do you do that? If it's a friend, depending on how close that friend is, how do you call out fake news without getting someone's backup?
Candor in relationships of trust is so important. And in fact, it's the heart of civility, right? We should be able to disagree with each other on different issues and even within our friendships. You'd mentioned former President Ford. I had the privilege and honor to work for him when I was in Vail, Colorado at the Vail Valley Foundation, where he was on the board of directors. And, you know, you go back and study something like President Ford and Speaker Tip O'Neill and the relationship and friendship they had from other sides of the aisle. And I've seen that happen here in Iowa as well, but we're moving away from those things. The way that you do that is through intentional relationships, and that you can disagree with someone rather than tearing them down, demeaning or misrepresenting what they're saying, or just throwing some other fake news back at them. I think, you know, Chuck Todd had asked about the BuzzFeed piece. I love the quote that he'd asked them: "Do you believe that you have helped the credibility of the media or the public with this, or has this diminished it?" And I think that's the thing that we should all be asking about things that we put out on our Facebook post, right?
Mm-hmm. Melissa Zimdars, I want you in on this, because I know you're working now on media literacy, and when that really fits in here when we talk about what our critical thinking, evidence-based problem-solving, failure of critical thinking in our society that was tweeted to us.
Yes, I have sort of two different points to make about this. First, I question how much we actually value critical thinking when we have proposals around the country that are gutting public education funding. Like, how can we really encourage critical thinking when we're not valuing education the way we should be? And when at the collegiate level, we consistently dismiss the humanities as being unimportant, which its primary goal is to encourage critical thinking. And secondly, some media scholars have pointed out that part of the problem is perhaps critical thinking gone too far. So being critical thinking encourages us to check where news organizations are funded, to look at the biases of the reporters or the owners. And some people in the fake news era of the lack of trust have taken this to an extreme where any examples of ownership by people they may view as suspect becomes a sign that it's a problem. So in a way, they're just exaggerating critical thinking as they were taught.
Mm-hmm. Okay, join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Melissa Zimdars of Merrimack College in Massachusetts. Scott Racker, he's director of the Robert D. and Billy Ray Center at Drake, formerly Character Counts, and Walker McCusick of VoteSmart. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to the phones, get some reaction. Paul is with us in Cedar Rapids. What do you want to put into the mix, Paul?
Hey, good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Here's my premise. It seems to me, to a large extent, that the mainstream media, contrary to some of your guests, really seems to get an exemption or a pass on the fake news information. Here's my actual question, and then I'll just...
Well, just to follow up there, do you have an example of mainstream media getting a pass?
Well, yeah, that's my question would be, reference a headline today in the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
And the headline says that Washington D.C. prepares for 900,000 protesters, but then if you read the body of the article, the 900,000 number is actually the Park Service's estimate of total attendance. This is at the inauguration on Friday, so clearly the headline is fake news, and that's the New York Times. That's as mainstream as it could be. So that's our comments on that, what I just talked about or asked.
Okay. So mainstream media, do you think Scott Racker, do you think they get a pass, as Paul says here, mainstream media? Of course, we talked about this in the first half hour before you joined us, Melissa. Media, whatever type, NPR, IPR, occasionally make mistakes, but there are retractions, corrections, and so forth. Media that is responsible does its best to be a credible source and verify the information that is being put out before it gets out, right?
The caller really brings forward a good point. And, you know, where have we looked in this country to vet out untruths and falsehoods has been a mainstream media that was checking facts and giving us information without bias. That's why I do believe that this last cycle really brought forward that there's, you know, the mainstream media needs to be asking themselves some real serious questions coming out of this last election cycle as well, and what role do they play. And that example, I haven't seen that headline, but if in fact that's the case, then that's a misrepresentation. And, you know, a lot of people don't read to the last paragraph. They read off the main headline because that's what they see on their feed as well. So I do think that mainstream media has, you know, there's an ethics of the media as well, that they have to be asking themselves some very serious questions, and where they see these inherent biases coming through, or, in fact, fake news, as we saw some of the issues come forward recently, what role do they play, and how do they right this ship? Because the cynicism now is not just of the public arena and public servants. It's also of the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm. Melissa, when you looked at the mainstream media most recently, do you see they have some burden here to carry in terms of carrying on with fake news, having fake news influence their reporting?
Definitely. And I think sometimes what's lost in the conversation about fake news are legitimate criticisms of mainstream media coverage, and headlines are definitely one of them. And we've seen sometimes such an emphasis on immediacy because of the internet, et cetera, over integrity. So I definitely don't want criticism to be lost, but I also think there's a difference between a slightly misleading headline, and which I, first of all, can't verify from the caller, by the way, and secondly, a totally outright fake story intended to deceive and spread misinformation.
Well, let's talk about one specific example that our listeners, most of us, are acquainted with because it happened just last week. CNN, and you mentioned it, Scott, CNN publishing a story that reporting that intelligence officials had given President-elect Trump, also President Obama, and eight top members of Congress a two-page memo summarizing allegations that Russian agents claimed they had compromising information on Trump. Now, CNN said officials had given no indication that they believed the material in the memo was to be accurate, but it had been passed on to the president-elect and President Obama and these members of Congress. Following that, BuzzFeed got on with 35 pages of material that went in depth on that. So what would you say, Melissa, on that story, your thoughts on that? The fact that it was the intelligence given to the president-elect and the president, whether it's accurate or not, is that good enough to publish?
Well, I think that's actually one check in the BuzzFeed doing the right thing column, is that they published it in its entirety, and that they highlighted the fact that it was suspect, not verified. They weren't trying to frame it as anything else. And I think that actually can be productive for misinformation, because other sources reported on the document secondhand, and some of those reports were much more sensational than the actual document. So I guess, I mean, I think they're sort of in a damned if you do, damned if you don't type situation. But I don't think it was totally wrong for them to publish the whole document.
Let's go to Walker McCusick. What do you say about that? You're in the business of getting nonpartisan information. What would you be your call, your thoughts on that CNN BuzzFeed stories?
Sure. Well, in all the data that we report on and we try to get to users is much more basic, and we do have a lot of reporters call into us to try to use us. We have a research hotline, 1-888-VOTE-SMART. Your callers can try it after this show if they'd like. And we do have reporters call in frequently to try to work with us to understand the research that we do. Now, our sources and the data that we provide don't apply directly to this story, but we provide a very important service for trying to verify sources and trying to verify facts before the news media, before they publish a story, and so they can understand the facts that they're reporting themselves.
We want to get back to callers, but Scott, I didn't want to leave you out here. Scott Racker on the CNN BuzzFeed articles, stories from last week.
Well, you know, the headline was, "These reports allege Trump has deep ties to Russia." It didn't say unsubstantiated reports. And then in the subheadline, it's a person who claimed to be a former British intelligence official. And then it says, "The allegations are unverified and the report contains errors." I see that come across my Facebook page, and that's enough for me to know I'm not going to read any further in it.
But what, I mean, this is intelligence that's being passed on to the president and president-elect. Doesn't that put it high on
the list? That's factual.
Yeah, that's factual. But the, our intelligence have gauged it to be worthy enough, credible enough to pass it on to the – you don't waste time with the president and the president-elect, do you?
Right. And I believe there's a lot of information passed on in our intelligence community that we don't know about. Some we should, probably. Some we shouldn't know about. But the fact is, just because it's been passed on does not make it fact, because
okay,
other people don't then pass it on. They just say there are reports that Trump has deep ties to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
They may or may not. But anytime you see something where they're reporting out, as the professor's saying, she's giving them credit for this in the subheadline, she's saying the allegations are unverified and the report contains errors. Flip this out of the political environment. What if you're at the Mayo Clinic, and what if this is the doctor's reports, and the doctors are passing on a potential file of information on the, to the next doctor, and they say the report is actually unverified and the report contains errors in it, but you might have cancer? We wouldn't do that in the medical profession, and we didn't, should not do that in the political media profession without having checks and balances. And I think that's the biggest thing we need here, are checks and balances on transparency and personal responsibility to seek out what really is in the information.
Just a few minutes left in our hour. Let's go to Jim in Dubuque. So many callers. I'm afraid we won't get to all of you, or nearly all of you. Jim in Dubuque, if I can ask you to be brief, please chip in what you have.
Okay. Snopes.com has always been my go-to site for checking facts. Someone asked Snopes if Hillary Clinton really said that people would have to change their views on abortion. Snopes came back and accurately said no, and included a link to the actual speech that she gave at this women's conference. What she did say there was, in addition to education and all this other stuff, change her views on reproductive health. Now, the thing is, I cannot find any instance where people in the political sphere talking about women's reproductive health did not include abortion. So here we have a case where Snopes was accurate, saying, no, she didn't say that, but the reproductive health, it's almost a code word for abortion, so yes, she did. How do your fact checkers deal with language that is loaded so much, that it's become code word almost?
All right, yeah, we're dealing with, Jim, good point, because it's not an on-off switch, black or white. There are nuances here, gray areas, Melissa, right?
Exactly, and I think that's part of the problem, is thinking about all these different kinds of news sources and how they each sort of treat facts and what is considered true much differently.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to mention earlier, the caller mentioned a New York Times article about 900,000 protesters. That was, if you want to check it yourself, because we're going to be ending this program, a headline from December 27th, if you'd like to check that out.
Okay.
To see the veracity of that as well. Closing words here. Melissa, very quickly, 20, 30 seconds for you about where we need to go here to be in better shape than we have been recently.
I agree with the other participants in this show that we definitely need greater transparency, but we also need to rebuild, obviously, trust. And this means that mainstream news organizations probably do need to be more careful in verifying sources, to stop giving ammunition to fake and highly partisan sources that then will turn around and call them fake news. And we also have to be much more deliberate in how we're using the term fake news, because there's different intents and there's different degrees of misinformation and inaccuracy.
Scott Racker, 20 seconds for you before we end.
Personal responsibility still plays a critical role in informed decisions. Our citizenry wants to be informed, I believe, and they need to seek those sources out. And I'd also throw into this that we should seek out people that think differently than we think. Civility is not just surrounding yourself with like-minded people. It's surrounding yourself with people that think differently than you, so you can find the best answer to where you go.
Exactly. You're singing Walker McCusick's tune there at votesmart.org. They have to have political opposites to join the group at the same time. Walker, tell us again, how do we find out more about your organization and and the easy-to-understand, unbiased information that you're offering.
Certainly. In order to take that responsibility that Scott's talking about, whether you're in media or a citizen yourself, check out votesmart.org for those raw facts. It is more work to be a citizen of that caliber, but that's the kind of citizenship we owe.
Okay, Walker McCusick, Scott Racker, and Melissa Zimtars, thank you for joining us this hour. It's been an enlightening conversation. Thank you very much, and fake news is something we're going to be dealing with in 2017 and beyond. Thank you, Scott, Walker, and Melissa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth, with help from Anna Williams. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Join us for Politics Wednesday tomorrow. Thanks for joining us.